Thanks for listening to The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac, on demand, brought to you by SEL Mortgage, the leaders in Colorado of special circumstance lending, helping everyone, including people with unusual financing needs. Locally owned and operated, visit myspecialmortgage.com. That's myspecialmortgage.com.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac.
Welcome to it. It's 5 o'clock here on The Drive. Big Al and D-Mac. Chad Brown sitting in for D-Mac today. And great conversation we're having here. You know, I didn't get around to it, but Vance Joseph is the eighth youngest coach in the NFL. And I'm looking at this list of coaches and ages of coaches and trying to get a real sense of what it means to coach in the NFL. And there's a coach out there, you know, that I'm thinking about coaching in the NFL and bringing that style of offense that we saw last year from the Eagles. I'm really intrigued by the Eagles, not because of the fact that they won the Super Bowl. I'm also intrigued by the Rams because of the way that they call the game. Like, there is a real art form into calling games on offense, defense, and special teams. And I think that, you know, because we give so much credit to the head coach because he is the head coach of the team, that sometimes we miss these great moments and these great play callers. And I like to give those great play callers all the credit in the world, because to me, it's what makes your favorite player your favorite player, because this coach knows how to get him in the right position. I thought my favorite offensive coordinators in the NFL for the last 3 years have been Andy Reid and Darrell Bevell. And the coordinator here of late that I really like because of what he does is Sean McVay and, of course, Doug Peterson. Now, Doug Peterson, what makes him interesting is that he left college football. He left pro football. He went to high school and learned this new system of coaching and this RPO package, and he brought it back to the NFL. So I started thinking about dynamic play callers at the collegiate level who would be great in the NFL. And I came up with a guy that you played against. I think you played against him. No, he may have been gone already, but you were gone already. Scott Frost.
At Nebraska.
Mm-hmm. This guy is an amazing play caller. 43 years old, right in that wheelhouse of being that guy that calls plays, but great play callers. When you were with Seattle in camp with them, Darrell Bevell was the offensive coordinator there. Did you like the way that he moved the chains and his concepts, and was it simple enough that anybody could learn?
Yeah, the Seahawks specialized in taking guys who, particularly in the offensive line, who had played other positions or on the other side of the ball. So your offense can't be too complex when you're trying to turn a defensive tackle into an offensive guard and expect that guy to be able to play.
Got you.
So there was some simpleness to it, but what I liked about it is there was enough old school power football to it, to where if you played a smart team and they knew what your tricks were going to be and they could keep up with you from a play calling perspective, well, then fine. We still have the power old school elements to our game where we can just push you off the ball. So he was able to accomplish both of those very different goals from a play calling standpoint. Sometimes guys want to be so tricky. People have answers for their tricks. They have no other tricks to play. They played all their cards. They're done with that.
Right.
The Seahawks still had the ability to line up and go some power with you and try to run the ball down your throat. So that's pretty rare for some of these play calls. But, man, what Sean McVay and what Kyle Shanahan are doing, they are at the forefront of a new way. I won't say if it's new, but if it's just maybe they are the two guys who are like the vanguard of creativity from an offensive play calling perspective. Multiple looking runs, the pass game, the timing of some of these plays, their willingness to go with a little bit of trickery to it, makes it very hard from a defensive coordinator standpoint. You as a player, I'm sure you've had a defensive coordinator who would hand you out a list on Saturday night at the hotel, and the list would be like 20 things long.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, I can't remember all 20 of these things. As opposed to a defensive coordinator who says, all right, we stop A, B, and C.
Right.
We're going to win this game.
Right. Three runs and five passes. Right. That's what I tell everybody. That's every NFL team. Three runs and five passes.
Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan, I think they force you as a defensive coordinator to one of those 20-point lists where you can't just say, let's take away this, let's take away that, and we're good. Because they've got so much creativity to their play calling, so many layers to it, and so many look-alike plays and counter plays that come off another play that if you sell your guys on stopping this, well, they'll eat you up all day because they've put you in a situation that now is predictable for them as a play caller. Oh, they're going to take away our stretch run? Well, we're going to bootleg on them all day. Go, yeah. Stretch run to the front side, bootleg to the back side. They don't have anybody back there. We'll kill them with a tight end.
You know, I was thinking about this process, and I was thinking about the age of hiring coaches. And you know, when we saw Mike Tomlin get hired, he was in his early 30s. Listen to this, man. When we start talking about the age of these coaches, Vance Joseph is the eighth youngest coach in the NFL at 45.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Tomlin is the ninth oldest coach at 46.
There's a sweet spot there, right?
We've been seeing Mike Tomlin have so much success, you know, getting to this age 46 in the NFL. And Vance Joseph is just going into his second year as a coach in the NFL. I believe there is a lot of magic to guys that when they're hired really young in pro football. Hey, Brad Stevens with the Boston Celtics, new ideas, new concepts, new types of players that have come out and have had success in the NBA and made it to the Eastern Conference Finals this year with basically a team full of babies. You know what I'm saying? And you look at that kind of success, there's something to it. There is a new school of thought when it comes to coaching, and I like that. And, you know, I worry about our offense and what we are about to experience here with Bill Musgraves, because I know that he's an old-school coach. Now, we're roughly the same age. I played against him in college. He was my teammate with the Denver Broncos, and I understand his coaching philosophies. Can coaches change their philosophy to adapt to this new style? Because what's happened in college football is that you have to score like 50 points in high school. To see a 50-point game in high school, it's nothing. To see a 50-point game in college, it's nothing. In the NFL, when you are opening people up and you have big splits in your offensive line, you got four wide out there and or you got three wide tight end and running back, and you're sitting in gun and you're running this RPO stuff, you open people up. I mean, nobody exposed the Patriots like the Eagles did last year. I mean, they absolutely exposed them about not having great athletes on the defensive side. And more of that is going to come. Can you convert a guy who's had these offensive ideas into a new school of thought? We had this conversation yesterday a little bit about Mike Holmgren, and I asked Mike Holmgren on Radio Row at Super Bowl, if he was coming back to the NFL, would he adopt any of the RPO principles and processes for these young guys? He said, no, I'd put my offense in because my offense still works. You understand? But guess what? You know what about that offense that I know? Every defensive coordinator in the NFL knows your offense.
Yeah, everyone.
They have been studied. We have, this is how we handle this. This is how we handle that. And because we've seen your style of offense, every year in the NFL, we know how to handle it on the defensive side.
We don't have to spend the entire offseason doing a study about your offense because
we know that
we've studied it for 25 years.
Yeah, Bill Walsh has run that variance. Mike Shanahan has run this variance of this offense. Mike Holmgren has run this variance of this offense. This offense that you're going to put out there has been the most studied offense in all of the NFL because Gary Kubiak ran it with the old Peyton Manning and it still worked and they won a Super Bowl. It worked. We know it works, but is it exciting to watch?
Okay, let's think about Nick Saban. Think of Nick Saban, you think of old school football, don't you?
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, to go back to the earlier conversation, I've seen Nick Saban doing the cha-cha slide at a recruit's house with his, you know, with his mom and his aunties. So Nick Saban is relatable.
Right.
That's how he lands all those young kids. That's how he lands all those recruits Of course, it's Alabama. They're going to win the championship. But he's made himself relatable. He stayed contemporary with the kids.
He changed his offense, by the way, too.
That's what I was about to get to next, because they used to be
a pro-style offense.
Pro-style offense, big offensive lineman. Let's pound the ball on you. Let's win the game with our defense. He has gone over. He was reluctant, but when Lane Kiffin got there, he finally allowed Lane Kiffin to change the Alabama style of offense. RPOs, quarterback in the pistol, all that stuff we now see all over college football. Alabama was one of the last teams to adopt that. So even an old school coach like Nick Saban recognized, if I want to compete, and particularly in college football where you're competing not just on the field, but you're competing for recruits, and you're competing for how do I get the best quarterback if I'm going to force him to hand the ball 40 times a game. I got to let this kid do what RPO quarterbacks do. So I got to run that system to get that kind of kid into my team.
Right, right.
So Nick Saban figured that out. I think Mike Holmgren, you know, again, was a very good coach. Clearly won a Super Bowl with the Green Bay Packers, brought the Seahawks to a Super Bowl. But there is something to be said for your ability to continue to adapt as a coach and take on and incorporate new ideas into what you do. That's ultimately going to be your best way for long-term success. Again, not just on the field, but recruiting players, whether it's free agency or the college recruiting process, relating to players. How do I keep myself relatable to these guys? If I run an antiquated offense or defense, well, that's instantly not relatable for these kids who grew up playing RPO stuff
right,
in
no
high
doubt.
School. They come in there like, what? Old school two tight ends? What? Oh, there's only one wide receiver? What? What is a fullback? What is that?
What's a huddle?
Right, what's a huddle?
What is this? What is this thing called a huddle?
There's a play call in the huddle?
Are we have to
the sideline?
We have to get together.
There aren't any pictures on the sideline we're pointing at?
Listen, man, the highest scoring team last year in all of college football last year in the entire country was UCF. UCF put up 48.2 points per game. Nearly 50 every single game. Man, that is Oklahoma put up 45.1 points per game. Ohio State, 40. Listen, I think as a football fan, you know, and I know they have some cupcakes sprinkled in there, you know, to you know, I think, you know, once you get a 28-point lead, you play the whole team. So, you know, they don't really run it up like they could. But I think I like that. I like scoring offense. You know, like I know I played on the defensive side, but I like gotcha plays. And you know, I just kept on hearing how many plays that were thrown out every week in the Philadelphia Eagles coaching contingency, because they had all of these schools of thought of run pass options, traditional offensive options. You had a guy who was an NFL player who ran a traditional offense, and he put those principles in. I want, you know, I don't know if we have a catalyst on this team besides Bill Musgrave that can push those ideas, because we got old school NFL coaches on offense now.
It's tricky because as a young head coach, I think you want to gather some experienced guys around you, because.
And we have those guys now.
So you want experience, but you don't want old school rigid experience. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
Because I thought Mike McCoy was going to bring up some razzle dazzle. You know, he had Tim Tebow.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We ran the RPO stuff, but we didn't have the pass off of it. It was really run or throw the ball. I mean, it wasn't an option.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like Tim Tebow was reading the backside linebacker. He was reading him, yes, to run the football. Not to throw it,
mm-hmm.
You know, so it was an option, more of an option than it was a real fully developed system. But I thought working with Tim Tebow and having that special year would give us like this guy who would come back and give us those principles and put it to work with our guys. It gave me hope last year. I mean, it gave me hope, but I was also doubtful going into it, because it was. We won games in the most magical way when Tim Tebow was the quarterback here. I mean,
yeah.
We won a game when we had two completed passes in the NFL. I mean, still yeah. to this day, I challenge you to find a more bizarre stat than that. You won a game and you threw two completed passes.
I've lost a game with one completed pass.
Huh?
I lost a game to a team with one completed pass.
Who?
My Steelers, year 14. When I played the Raiders out in Oakland, they got two pick sixes off of Ben. That's how they scored. We defensively held them to less than 100 yards, and they had one completed pass, and we lost.
You got to be kidding. Who was the quarterback of record?
For the Raiders, I have no idea, but it was Ben Roethlisberger for the Steelers.
Who was it for the Raiders?
I don't know.
Who was that quarterback?
I don't know. It was awful.
It was more than that. You just remember one pass that was caught.
I'll look up the stats real
quick. What year was that? Year 14?
That was year 14 for me, so that was 2006.
2006. So you telling me that you played in a game and you couldn't, and your teams knew that they couldn't throw in, and you couldn't load up. They had a total of 100 yards of offense and
99 yards, I believe, of offense. I'm going to look up
the stats.
See,
in that situation, when you play on the defensive side, you kind of get like Ottavino last night when Ionetta dropped that ball right in the middle of his chest. I mean, it was the most clear strike that I ever seen thrown, and it hit him right in the center of his chest. Dropped it, and the run scored, and Ottavino was standing over top of the home plate with both hands on his hip like, you got to be kidding me, man.
Okay, they had five completions.
Okay,
sorry.
I was going to say.
They were 5 for 14 for 51 yards.
But it was five completions.
Five completions.
Two completions.
98 yards of total offense. Yeah, so I've been in one of those kinds of
games. But you have never seen that before.
No.
You're talking about a magical defense, and we were just starting to build something on that defensive side. You know, I remember being at the game with one of my good friends, and we were up in the Budweiser suite with the rest of the alumni, and we were watching the game, man, and I just never will just forget that Chicago Bears game. And all the Bears had to do was run a play and drop down to a knee. I mean, who was the running back? Barber? Was it Marion Barber? Marion Barber runs out of bounds. I could not believe what I was watching. All he had to do is go down, and basically this game is done.
Yep.
And he runs out of bounds.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself,
snatching defeat from the jaws of victory.
I mean, what are you? You're on an outside zone, and the coach doesn't – I mean, you know, get on the ground. Outside zone, and you bounced it all the way to the sideline.
Everyone in the stadium knew what the right play was in that situation. Everyone watching at home knew what the right play in that situation was, except for that guy.
We get the ball back. We get the ball back, throw a couple first downs, and get in field goal position. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
It was the most bizarre year, but thank you so much.
God bless y'all.
You're welcome, Timmy. But what we saw was Mike McCoy utilizing these new concepts in the NFL. I mean, we gave the Patriots a little bit of trouble the first time. The second time, they clowned us. Tom Brady punted the football, okay? I think that's the only time in Tom Brady's career that he's punted a football. It can't be more than two. You have to really be beating a team bad to ask your quarterback to a quick kick on third down. Are you kidding me? This is Tom Brady. Tom Brady kicked the ball against us, man. Have you even heard of something like that?
Brady has two punts in his career.
Two punts, man.
Yep.
Two punts. I bet you in that first game it was a huge blowout, too. You know what that is? You know, I'll tell you this story. When I was a senior in college at the University of Colorado, Bill McCartney was our head coach. Knavis McGee and I propositioned him every game for 5 weeks because he promised us that we were going to play tight end in one game.
I was so jealous.
We kept blowing teams out, and I was like, Coach, you got to put me in. You got to put me in a tight end. You know. And then finally, we worked on it for 2 weeks. So we're playing, and this is a true story. I talked to Coach Simmons about this. Coach, we were playing Kansas State. Playing Kansas State in Boulder. We were beating them like 59 to like 6 or something. Coach Mack looks down and says to us, okay, guys, you've done all that we've asked you to do as Colorado Buffaloes. You guys want to play offense. We're going to put you in. on offense. Now, CJ drops back and throws a pass to McGee, hits him right square between the 9 and 6. Ball pops up in the air. And I look at CJ and I said, dude, throw me the ball. And so that was one play. The next time we got back in this formation, we go double tights again. And coach told VJ, VJ was the quarterback. Coach told VJ, throw it to Alfred. Okay.
Yep.
Because Knavis got his shot. Okay. Now it's time for Alfred to throw, catch a football. So we're playing Kansas State. VJ looks at me in the huddle. He said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to run a post corner, right? The dude I start running down, and, you know, the dude started playing the corner route, so I turned it into a post. It was no corner.
Right.
I threw my hand up like Randy Mouse.
Right.
VJ threw it up in the air. You remember this?
He threw it high. You had to go up and get it. I remember this play.
I went up with one hand and caught that football, and it was my only reception in college. And it felt so good. I should have stayed on the offensive side of the ball.
I was so jealous. I was so jealous.
The crowd went nuts. I held the football up, and we walked off the field, of course, beating. We beat the snot out of Kansas State. Now, listen to this. This is how football works. Some 10 years later, Coach Bob Simmons, our outside linebacker coach, is the head coach at Oklahoma State.
Mm-hmm.
Oklahoma State, Kansas State is beating the brakes off of the University of Oklahoma. Beating the brakes off of Oklahoma State. Bill Snyder puts in a 320-pound defensive lineman and gives him the football, and they score. Bill Snyder goes over to Coach Bob Simmons and said, that was for putting Knavis McGee and Alfred Williams in at tight end. I love these stories, man.
Coaches don't let go of those grudges. Keep them grudges going.
I love these stories, man. And this is these creative moments. These moments that are burned into your mind. You'll never forget. You know, Tom Brady going out for a pass in the Super Bowl and missing.
Dropping it.
Missing a pass reception on third down that would have extended a drive and got them maybe a touchdown if he catches the ball. And then Nick Foles in the same game going out for a touchdown pass and catching one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are burned into your football memory, man. And I think every time I start looking at those kind of moments around football, I want to have it here in Denver. I want creativity. I want the offense to work. I want new concepts, Chad. And that's the way that cookie crumbles. Hey, on the other side, man, the Rockies had a big night last night. And I just want to get your thoughts on that bullpen. Even though we pulled it off, I got to get your thoughts about the game last night.
Sandy Clef here to tell you about SCL Mortgage Special Circumstance Lending, locally owned and operated. And if you're self-employed or work on commission, this is the place for you. Bank statement loans are back. You don't need tax returns to do your loan. In some cases, the bank statement loans can be done with credit scores in the low 600s. MySpecialMortgage.com on the web, 303-790-2222, the phone number. SCL Mortgage, licensed by the Colorado Department of Regulatory Agencies, number 120-0716.
You're listening to The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac on Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan.
Welcome to The Drive on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan. The Rockies have stopped that losing streak. Why do things feel better here in Colorado today, Chad? I mean, that there's nothing like breaking a losing streak. Nice choice of music there, Big Sexy.
Because it was more than a losing streak. It was ugly.
It was a home losing streak.
Home losing streak.
That's what made it so bad.
And you were losing in games that you were ahead of, games where you had to lead twice and gave it up late in the game. It was how you were losing. So it's one thing to, you know, get squeaked by. It's another to give up 25 runs in two games.
Mm. Well, I'll tell you this. Last night, just being able to see us win. I mean, when you hand the ball off to your bullpen, I'm starting to feel like we need a 4 or 5 run cushion to get through this. We ended up giving 3 up. That game last night was fun. It was fun because we won. I think anytime I'm watching baseball, I'm just looking for dynamic pitches. And when I see the dynamic pitches happen, I think it's almost magical. It's like hitting, you know, for me as a golfer, you know, hitting a great bunker shot. Every time I see a pro go into a bunker, I can't wait to see them hit the great bunker shot because it's a hard thing to execute for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I know it's hard.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, not everybody as good as you, whoever you are. But I'm looking at great pitchers, man, and great pitches and great sequences and guys battling and get out of jams. And, you know, Ottavino getting out of that seventh inning last night with only giving up just one, battling out and then having a clean eighth and then handing the ball over to Wade Davis and him struggling, man, giving up two runs. You know, it felt like, you know, I know it wasn't officially a save because the Rockies were up by four going into that, but to only win by two, you still felt like, oh man, there's something, you know.
I mean, after the fourth, it was 9-2 for the Rockies. And then suddenly, you know, you give up four runs in the seventh, between the seventh and the ninth inning. That's why I asked the question when we started the show. Yes. We can be happy. You can be excited. But at the same time, winning like this is not really sustainable because the issue that you've had in the past, the bullpen, still cropped up its ugly head late in the game.
Oh. And then in the third inning, man, we had back-to-back-to-back home runs. It felt like, you know, the Blake Street Bombers were back. I mean, Trevor Story is on a tear right now, man. He's playing with so much confidence. Cargo had that beautiful left swing rolling, man. I mean, it was nice, man. It you know, every time I see Cargo hit one long, I say he's our guy. You know what I'm saying? I have so many great memories of this guy crushing it. But when he misses those outside low, you know, pitches, you talking about driving me crazy and just. I'm just coming on, man, as this baseball guy. I like the game, but I the only part that I really like is the pitching. I don't really appreciate the hitting because I see the ball movement and the artistry behind the pitches, and I just think that's great. And I think right now, Ottavino is certainly my favorite pitcher here on the Rockies. The control that he has, you know, it's incredible. And I wish that he was our closer, but, you know, Wade Davis is our guy. And once again, you know, we get to that seventh inning, man. Oh, my goodness.
It gets scary.
Brian Shaw, man. I mean, what are you? I mean, what are we doing with Brian Shaw? I mean, this is, to me, you know, I don't know when a guy loses it, you know what I'm saying? Like, he absolutely loses his confidence. I don't know what to do. Do you pull him?
Leave
him in there and let him work it out, you know, but it's going to hurt the team while he's working it out? Or do you just designate him down to the double-A ball or triple-A ball to figure his stuff out? I was about to cuss there, but figure his stuff out. And you know, how do you deal with this? You gave him a three-year, $27 million deal. How do you, this is not supposed to be happening.
Here's how I look at when you lose your confidence.
Every night it happens. Like, you know, every night.
I look at it as I would any other injury that you suffer. You cannot get back on the field until you show me you can perform at a high level.
But there's a game tonight.
But yeah, but you're injured. It's in this case a mental injury, but you're just as injured as
a
guy.
Don't you think that would crush some guy? You know, you got to know the mentality of your team. We can't keep doing the same thing. You know what? Einstein's definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and wishing for a different result, and you know exactly what the outcome has been on those previous trials.
Right. So
you're gonna drive yourself insane throwing Wade Davis out there in the ninth right now. I mean, that is not pretty. But Brian Shaw in the seventh? I mean that's ridiculous. I mean, that's ridiculous right now.
Well,
I don't know what to do, though. I really don't know what to do.
I think you got to treat it, like I said, like an injury. And you cannot get back on the mound until you show me you can go at a high level. It's been clear.
He's going to be out there tonight, guaranteed. I mean, he got a short leash last night.
So you're talking about driving people crazy. You're going to lose games. You have lost games because of this. So
I think every baseball player that is seeing Brian Shaw sees the baseball coming out of his hand instantly. Like, I mean, just by the, you know, the way that people are just you know, making, you know, getting hits on him, it the ball in his pitch selections has got to be the most the consistent pattern, and they know what's coming, you know, because, I mean, he just gets tagged. He gets tagged every night.
He must have some kind of tell.
Exactly.
Like, you know, you study offensive tackles, and depending on where his hands were and his foot were,
right,
with some tackles, you could figure out,
oh, this is the play.
He's going to be a run. It's right. Going to be a pass. He's going to short set me.
This is the short set.
Right. Or this is going to be a draw, whatever the case may be. There has to be some.
He's too close to the offensive guard. It's going to be a three-step pass.
Right. There's got to be a tell happening somewhere, because it seems as if, you know, yeah, you're a major league pitcher. We paid this bullpen lots of money.
$100 million,
dog. At some point, your skills would have to show through, unless you're just doing something. Either you completely lost confidence, which I think is a factor here, or there has to be some kind of weird, funky tell that you're giving
away
that the other guys have been able to read and no one else on your team has discovered to tell you to stop that. How you're holding your glove, how you wipe your sweat, how, you know.
Something. This has got to be something, right?
You're tapping your toe twice when it's a fastball, whatever the case may be. Something is happening.
You know what? That you bring up a good point there, because, you know, we all have tells as athletes.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a book on everybody. I hear Cecil talking about this all the time, but every player has a book on them, and right now the book in Colorado is that, you know, you got to get the, you know, the starters are giving you 5-6 good innings, you know, and then they're turning it over, and that's when we make our run. This is this guy's tail. This is this guy's tail. This is what he likes in when he's up in pitches at bats, and when he's down, these are his pitches. He won't deviate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's that kind of scouting report.
Yeah, it's got to be.
It's got to be something like that when they are dealing with our bullpen. But, you know, we're done with that stinky home losing streak. I'm glad it stopped at 8. Now we have a winning streak at home, and let's see how long we can propel this winning streak tonight.
All winning streaks start with one.
All of them start with one. You know, and tonight on the bump, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing Chad Bettis and see what he has to bring tonight.
Well, he's going against
Chad Bettis.
He's got a great name. Great initials.
Seth Lugo is going for the Mets tonight. Wow, man. It's just a lot of runs being scored against our defense, man. Yeah. I just love, you know, there is, I'm quickly becoming an Ottavino a fan. You know, I haven't been a fan of any one pitcher since Ubaldo left. I kind of like John Gray and his toughness early on, but you know, he's not the same guy anymore. I don't know if we have an ace on this team, but Marquez last night, gritty, great performance. I kind of like him because, yeah. Herman or Jermaine, the way it's spelled, Herman. but he's gritty. I think that he's our best pitcher on the staff.
Well,
Big Sexy, do you have anybody who is a better candidate to be our ace?
Honestly,
is he our streak stopper? I think he's
Herman
our streak
Marquez,
stopper.
Herman Marquez, I would say, is the Rockies'
ace
at this point.
Right.
Kyle Freeland has the stuff. If you just harness it and the consistency would get there.
Right.
And Marquez is batting .306 for a pitcher. Not bad.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Helping yourself in your own contest. I mean, that's good. Hey, man, it's been great rolling with you guys. We got one more segment, man. And I want to ask you guys a quick question about something that I saw on television. And it's the this new movie coming out, Uncle Drew movie. And got me thinking about my favorite athletes that turned actors. And I'll talk to you about it next on The Drive.
Don't test that stereo.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac.
Don't touch that stereo. Welcome to The Drive. I have my main man, Chad Brown, in with me, and I'm telling you, don't touch that stereo. Let that breathe. Hey, Big Sexy and Chad, I want to ask ask you guys both. I mean, there are so many athletes who may be clamoring to get to Los Angeles for the same reasons that Shaquille O'Neal wanted to get there, to be in movies and Shazam and whatever else. What other movies was Shaq in? Was he in... I know he was in the movie with Penny Hardaway. What was that?
Blue Chips.
Listen to this, man. In 2018, listen to this. 15 athletes will be in movies, okay? John Cena is going to be in the Bumblebee, the movie, Transformer. LeBron James is going to be in Smallfoot, an animated film. Ronda Rousey is in Mile 22. Shaq is in Show Dogs, whatever that is. Gina Carano is in Madness in the Method, MMA fighter. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Vibe 2, Journey to China, okay? The Rock is in Skyscraper. I've been seeing that. He's got like an artificial arm or leg in that movie. I've been seeing the previews for that. Tony Parker is going to be in Escape Plan 2. Hades, and that's the Stallone movie. LeBron James is in House Party Remake.
Oh, that's
how about that, good. Man?
Old
how about
school.
That?
Going
Mikey,
back.
Michael Finley is the director in this new film that's going to cover high school players who make the transition from one high school to a new high school. And Finley is he's going to be the creative director on this movie. Kyrie Irving, this is the movie that got me started thinking about this, is going to be in Uncle Drew. And, of course, in that movie, he's going to be the feature. And, of course, those commercials that he's done. What was that, Sprite? Is that Sprite who he does the commercial with? I know he's so good in the commercials. I don't even know what he endorses. But The Rock is in Rampage again. That's two movies this year. Pepsi. I guess Uncle Drew is Pepsi. Gina Carano, second movie, Scorched Earth. And Terry Bradshaw is in a new movie, Father Figures. And John Cena is in another movie, too, Blockers. I guess John Cena in this this laughable big hulk of a guy that you can, you know, poke fun at is his new role. Not the tough guy, the WWE star. He's more of a big, lovable, you know, muscle-bound guy, and I think that works for him.
Well, because it's against character, you know what I mean? So for Rock to be some evil, you know, action kind of guy, to go against character and be the soft guy who saves the day, that's what John Cena's trying to do, but in a little bit more slapsticky kind of way. That movie with Amy Schumer, he was fantastic in that movie. Help me out with the name of that one, Big Sexy. Trainwreck. Yes,
yeah.
He was fantastic. You know, that was a great performance by him. So, you know, Carl Weathers. You know,
oh, yeah.
Apollo Creed, but then going against type and being in Happy Gilmore, you know, showing his comedic skills.
right.
So some of these guys are fantastic, but I think the key as an athlete is either to play yourself, a role you're very comfortable doing, or to play against type and kind of make fun of yourself in some kind of way.
Who is the biggest athlete turn actor of all time? I'll give you one of two answers. I think there's really only... Well, I can give you three. I can give you three because I'll count Burt Reynolds as a Florida State football player. Okay,
like running back there, right?
Burt Reynolds, uh-huh. Okay, and all those great movies he made a long time ago. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right.
Or The Rock.
That's it.
I mean, what? Who would you say is the best athlete turned actor?
The best athlete turned actor? Man. Let me see. Fred Dreyer used to be a pretty good player for the L.A. Rams. He was a longtime actor.
Jim Brown was an actor. Kareem Abdul was an actor. But they weren't like, they didn't become, you know, they didn't jump into it like, maybe they, Carl Weathers, you mentioned Carl Weathers, but you know.
But he wasn't a great player.
Terry Crews, you know, I mean, there are a bunch of guys that have.
Maybe Terry Bradshaw. One Super Bowl. Was a very good player.
Merlin Olsen.
Terry Bradshaw's in the Hall of Fame. And Terry Bradshaw has hosted TV shows, hosted Sunday football shows, and been in movies, and not been movies where he's just playing himself. He was actually acting in the movies.
But there's really only, I mean, come on, there's only really two, really. I mean,
you're throwing Bob Uecker on the list, too.
Uecker has been great. I mean, those
Bubba Smith, Police Squad, you kidding me?
O.J. Simpson, if you're going to go there. I mean, but they didn't really, you know, I mean, there's only two. Who's the best of the two? And you know which two I'm talking about. All right, right. Big Sexy, I mean, is there only two athletes that have become actors that really we know them really as actors, not really as athletes anymore?
The Rock's the best.
Who's number two?
Arnold.
Okay. Now, me, I would say, you know, I do like those Fast and Furious with The Rock in them.
Man, The Rock was great. The Rundown in the Amazon with Rosario Dawson. He's been in so many great movies, man.
But, I mean, you're going to talk. Really, you're talking about the Terminator, dog.
I know. The Terminator was dope.
What'd you say, Big Sexy?
It's hard to leave Carl Weathers off any top list now. We're talking Rocky. We're talking Apollo Creed.
Right.
Yeah.
Happy Gilmore.
We're talking Happy Gilmore. Jeff right. Peterson.
The Count of Monte Fisto.
That was really his, only two, though.
That was his title, one of his titles.
Bubba Smith, though. Bubba Smith had a great long career. Rosie Greer had a great career.
Terry Crews is coming up.
How about Michael Jordan? Did he ever get mentioned?
No.
Space Jam?
No, he was terrible on Saturday Night Live, and he was a terrible actor.
Hey, man, it's been great rolling with you, man. I appreciate you sitting in with me, Chad. That's the great Chad Brown. And once again, let's get your Twitter numbers up. What's your Twitter handle?
Chad Brown 94. Help me get to 10,000. Let's go.
All right. At Chad Brown 94. Hook him up, fellas. Follow my main man. And for my main man, Big Sexy, appreciate you every day for putting it together, man. And Kyle Berry, couldn't have done it without you, bro. Appreciate you every day, man. You guys have a fantastic night, and we'll see you back here at 3 o'clock tomorrow on The Drive. Good night.
Now, man.